This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit Par Luis Inshpesek, my friends. It's great to have you guys listen to this great show again. And hey, Brian, by the way, folks, we don't have Chris today. Chris is attending other business.
He's a busy guy.
Yeah, it's important. We got to get advertisement, and he's out there working. So God bless him. Yeah. I finally got done with Stephen Kirkjian's book.
Yeah.
Master of Thieves. And I got to tell you, man, that was damn good.
You're going to have to let me borrow it.
Oh, it was damn good. Well, it's on audio. I bought it on audio.
Oh, okay. Well, then
yeah, so you may
have to get my own copy.
Yeah, you definitely have to. You'll check that out. And it was unbelievable. And they still haven't caught the guys that have taken this from the Gardner Museum.
That's insane.
And there's like three Rembrandts out there.
Just missing.
And they're saying if you bring this back, you get $5 million.
Wow.
So you want to put on your Sherlock Holmes outfit?
Go try and figure it out ourselves.
Us too. Go to Boston. Maybe we'll take Chris with us. We'll cover every angle here. Yeah, but you know what? A lot of people have tried, and guess what? I don't want to give it away too much, but a lot of people are dying because of this Gardner museum thing. So they still haven't captured anyone, or they haven't brought back the artwork to this museum. And it's a well-written book. You guys got to check it out. It's by Stephen Kirkjian. He was our guest 2 weeks ago. And and you can find it on Amazon.
Yeah.
And that's a big plug to us. Yes. If you guys want to go to ArmeniaProud.com, and you could go on your right-hand side, there will be a Amazon little box there right in the middle, I think, right on the right
it's
side.
It's on the right-hand side.
Yeah. Just click on that and then shop away. Get your Master of Thieves, and we get a little love back. And Stephen would be very happy that you guys bought his book too. But I'm telling you, it's not a book you just buy because of Stephen Kirkjian. I don't think he'd even want that. This is good stuff. I couldn't stop listening to. I had to go a couple more extra blocks around Edwardsville just to finish this one up.
I do that too sometimes with audiobooks.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Thank you so much for being on the show there, Stephen, and thank you for telling us about the Master Thieves. That's the name of the story. And we've got a great guest. Our guest this week is Ara Oshagan, and he's a photographer. And he's real famous, impressive pictures. I love these pictures that he's been taking. Makes you look at the pic and analyze it. And I tell you, I've been looking at your pics, Ara, and it's like I look at one pic, and I'm looking at this for like 5 to 10 minutes. Am I crazy? But I'm really enjoying it, man. Ara, glad to have you on board.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate you having me on, Jono.
Yeah.
And if you're spending time with each picture, I mean, I think you're doing the right thing. And that's the whole purpose of my work is, a lot of my work has to do with identity and who we are, what we are, what kind of life we live, and the complexities of that identity. So, you know, the kind of images I make are oftentimes very layered and complex and with a multidimensional. So the whole idea of the viewer is to spend time with the image. So I appreciate that you're getting that and you're doing that.
I mean, here's one. I got to tell my people out there just listening. If you guys can get a visual, you got a donkey kicking back behind some sort of a trailer to a hitch or something that's broke down. They're both like looking like we're not moving. And it's funny. You make a little satire out of that. I mean, not all your picks are satire, of course, but that's a funny pick that you could sit there and analyze that for about 5-10 minutes right there, you know?
Yeah, so I think that's an image that from one of my projects that I did in Harappa. So I've been kind of working on this trilogy of bodies of work, one of them being in Armenia and in Nagorno-Karabakh, where I spent many years, and that was my first book that I published.
Go ahead, Ara.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, just like in life, right, John? I mean, there's sometimes sad moments, bad moments, good moments, funny.
And I was going to ask you that. Yeah, I was going to ask you. The pictures that I've run across, you don't depict a lot of the soldiers fighting or anything like that. You're more of the background type, to where you're taking a lot of pics from the people that are going through all of this in Nagorno-Karabakh. Am I right about that?
Yeah, definitely. My main interest, as I was saying, to go into the space, Nagorno-Karabakh, you know, it was very much post-war. I didn't go in there during the war. I came, first time I went was in 1998, which was many years after the war. And so the idea was to look at the space in which people are living and recovering from the aftermath of this war, you know, as well, because finally, we can't pretend to be from Armenia. I'm not from Armenia. I was born in Beirut, grew up in the U.S. So a lot of the work also has to do with me and my relationship to that place. And mm-hmm. So I find that the ideas that I want to portray are really from just regular people living their lives in that space and me reflecting my own relationship into that space.
Right. And your pictures... are they pictures that you ask them to post for you, or do you just try to capture that moment and try to take the picture of what's going on in that moment?
Yeah, there's no posing whatsoever in that, specifically in that Harappa work. There's some projects, installation work that I've done where it's specifically portraits, but in that work there is no posing, and you know, the whole process is a very long kind of long-term process where I spend a lot of time with people. I get to know them, you know, they get to know me, and then, you know, they get comfortable in my presence. So the whole idea there is to that they acknowledge my presence and my relationship with them, but they don't acknowledge that they don't react when I'm taking
pictures.
They're
doing their everyday life is what you're saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, I try to integrate myself into the flow of life and try to capture that.
There was this one pic. I love this pic. It's and you may not think too much of it, or you might. It's got gun shells. It's got the gun shells like maybe 50 to 100 yards away from this beautiful church in Nagorno-Karabakh, and it kind of symbolizes what Armenian people, the Armenian race, is all about. I mean, it had to take those gun shells for that beautiful work to be put 50 to 100 yards behind it.
There's a lot of symbolism in there, John, as you noticed, because there's the church, which represents, you know, millennial, our existence in that place millennially, right, all these years, and part of our survival. And then there is the shells that is also part of our survival, which is the recent war. There's a lot going on in that one picture, representing different parts of who we are as Armenians. But what's interesting about that particular picture is that those shells were actually stored inside that church. So the Azeris, this is in Shushi, so the Azeris controlled Shushi for most of the war. And they placed those shells inside the church, knowing that then Armenians, you know, were not going to bomb the church, so their shells would be safe.
Really?
So, yeah. And so when Armenians took over Shushi, and this sort of very daring, because Shushi is up on this mountain ridge, there was this tremendous daring military operation. Armenians took it over, and then they emptied the shells out of the church. And that's when they were still there. You know, it was emptied like 6 years ago. They were still sitting there for 6 years when I got there.
Okay. So when you arrived there, all the, I guess they want to call it a conflict. We got to say it was a war. Was it all over then, or was there still skirmishes between the two?
Well, you know, it was still a militarized border, right?
Right.
Even though there was ceasefire in 94, but the border is still militarized. And there was like always like shots happening. Even today, like a couple of days ago, somebody was killed by Azeri fire, right? So it's right. still a militarized border. Then it was a little more intense even. So yeah, there was peace internally, but it was still, everybody was still on full alert, you know? And right. as you know, last April, there was that attack by the Azeris on Nagorno-Karabakh.
Right,
which
right.
people have been waiting for many years. And so it was kind of a surprise and not a surprise. So no, it's still militarized. It's still kind of this edgy place, you know? And that was kind of what one of the things that attracted me to it.
Now, are you headed back sometime in the near future?
Probably, you know, I that project is done, but I've done other projects in Nagorno-Karabakh in the last couple of years. So whenever I go to Armenia, I definitely go there.
Bravo.
And so actually we're working now on perhaps we're working with an organization to do a monument in Nagorno-Karabakh. So I think we will definitely be going back there this year sometime.
You know, that's really cool that you're saying that because I'm from Beirut as well. And I moved here like in 74, 75, right before the Civil War. We may have been on the same plane coming to the United sure. States. But I remember as a little kid going around this mountain like 15, 20 times. And then when you get to the top, it had this black marble monument that represented the Armenian genocide in Lipanon. And when you said monument, I just thought of that as a little kid. I remember that. Do you remember that in Lebanon?
Yeah, so I think you're talking about the Bikfaya monument, which is this big, I mean, like 100-foot tall monument
yes.
that's set up in the hills. Yeah, that the Armenians were able to build, I don't know what year, I guess in the 60s.
Right.
So that's definitely, and so you were there in the 60s, I suspect, or
no,
in the early 70s.
Early 70s. Early 70s yes. as a little kid. I remember like 73. That was our, my ears would pop and everything. But once we got there, I was like so impressed by this. And I'm glad to hear that there's something like that being put together in Artsakh, you're saying.
Yeah. So it's not for the genocide, but it's for the Halo Trust. So the Halo Trust is an organization that's been clearing landmines in Artsakh.
Beautiful.
For almost 20 years. Since the war ended, they've been clearing landmines. And so there is this effort now to build a monument dedicated to everybody who died because of landmines, plus people who made the clearing of landmines possible. And so they reached out to me and my group to do a monument. And so we're working on that now.
Oh, we'd love to get more information on that and put it on our site as well. That would be great. If there's anything that we could do to help out, that would be definitely something to look into. Now, we've got the Artsakh thing covered. Now I gotta switch it up a little bit here. You went to that side and you did that type of work for. I really think that that's really patriotic and everything like that. And then you've taken pictures of jail people. I mean, fill us in on that because now you exited off the road there. I don't think as Armenians we'd like to see that side. Tell me a little bit what pushed you on that one.
So, you know, patriotism is it's not the word that I would explain in terms of my motivation, especially to do some of this work. It's really identity. It's really about, John, it's about we ask the question who we are, what we are, and we, not as an Armenian, but as a global citizen, right? And so, but you come with a certain history. And so whatever that history could be, it's Guatemalan or you know, Brazilian or whatever. So I think as an artist, my motivation was to explore that history that has put me here. And so that takes me back to my certain Armenian roots. But also, you know, I'm a very socially conscious person. You know, I think it's very important to be aware of what's going on in the world besides in your own backyard. And so I've done these
right.
projects. I was able to go into prisons here in California following certain juveniles who were sentenced to prison and following them as they went through juvenile hall and they went to state prison. And so I developed a whole project, including some of their words and some of their poetry into that project. And actually, what's interesting, John, is that so there's a lot of overlap. To me, it's all kind of the same space in which we all live. The other project I was doing had to do with identity as well, with the Armenians or with my identity in Los Angeles, with the community I'm involved with, at least the Armenian community. And in jail, while I was doing this prison project, I ran into Armenians who were in prison. Mm-hmm. And so these two projects kind of overlapped, where the identity of what it means to be who we are today includes, you know, not only all the good things like the churches and the schools and all these things, but also, you know, I photographed these prisoners, which became part of that project. I photographed drug addicts out in the Palmdale, out in the desert, alternative lifestyle. So all these things, including the prisoners, became part of my own identity as I explore the space in which I live.
Hmm. Because, well, you know what? When we're living in the Midwest, or when we're, we've got maybe, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred families that live in the St. Louis area, we've always glorified being an Armenian. I guess different regions like yours, you know, I mean, you got so many Armenians out in L.A., you see a different being as an Armenian than kind of how we do. Here, if we showed that, we'd go, hey, you know what, let's turn that off. We don't want to see that about Armenians being in jail or something like that, or drug addicts. But over there, I guess it's part of reality. That's what you guys are seeing every day.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're seeing it every day, right? I mean, there's still some of that kind of putting on the blinders, not talking about,
right,
you know, some of these things. There's always that, right, as a community. But yeah, I think, and you're right here, it's a little bit, people talk a little bit more freely. But still, you know, to me, it was very important as the exploration of who we are to have that identity defined in a very broad way, not in a very constricted kind of way, to cast the net as wide as possible. And we do have, you know, I grew up partially in the Midwest. I went to school, high school in Wisconsin.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And so when we first came from Beirut, we were in Wisconsin for a few years.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Was that you, Wisconsin University, or?
Yeah, Madison, in Madison.
Yeah, I played football against Wisconsin team that was University of Whitewater in Wisconsin. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. I also noticed that you're not into the, well, you know what's going on in Armenia. I mean, every pick now that comes out of Armenia, there's some soldier or police holding one of the civilians or something like that. I didn't see that type of agenda from your pictures either. Is there something that you didn't want to get involved in, or something that you haven't looked into yet?
Yeah, it's just something that I haven't got involved with yet from an image-making perspective, you know. So I did all my work there in Qarapa a few years ago. And so, you know, this whole movement now, the citizens trying to have an impact on government is very new. And so I haven't been back in Armenia working on that yet. So I am involved, though. You know, I'm a signatory on Justice for Armenia, you know, the effort led by, you know, Atome Gayan and Arsenia Khanjian and Vahe Berberian bring fair elections to Armenia. So I'm involved partially with that from a political perspective, but not from sort of an image-making sort of that context.
When as a person like you that takes pictures and gets the people to notice these pictures, I mean, is there a time when you just say, you know what, this may be a little too controversial for our Armenian people to see? And what I mean by that is, if you went there and you took some pictures of a mob or something like that, something happening, and let's say you taking a picture, do you look at it and say, you know what, this may not be good to get out or anything like that? Or do you just feel this is everything needs to get out? Do you censor it, is what I'm saying?
Well, no, there can't be any censoring, and but it also has to do a lot with what you do, what you're working on, right? I think if you are there as a journalist and the whole idea is to get out the news of what's going on in Armenia right now, I think 100% you cannot censor. It has to be told as it is, or else as a journalist or as an right. image maker, you lose your credibility.
Right.
So that's really, really important. So I don't think there should be any censoring.
And you see, I'm kind of talking in the spectrum of me being part of the diaspora, where we don't want to see some sort of an uprising or some sort of civil war in Armenia, to where I'm just like, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be having all these social medias out about what's happening, to where there's so much conflict. I was there in July, and I got to tell you, I didn't see that much, but I get on Facebook that day to put some of my stuff out, and every other post was something happening in Yerevan that I was there maybe 1 hour earlier. I didn't see any of that. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, right. So what's an interesting phenomenon, right? You could self-censor, but then everybody's out there taking pictures now, right? So there's like, it doesn't make any sense to censor yourself to begin with. That just as the first idea, that even if you censor yourself and taking what you say, the pictures you take, there's going to be other people posting that stuff.
Right.
And so I think, yeah, in Yerevan, everything is so fragmented. These stories that I heard also, where there would be major demonstrations on one side of town and the other side of town was just like nothing was happening.
that's true.
Very sort of, very, very sort of fragmented a kind of existence that seems like Facebook is the thing that ties everything together. I always say that, you know, if Facebook went down for a day, like the whole country, like Armenia would just stop for one day. It would just completely stop. Nothing would happen.
I think you're right. How did you get involved in pictures? I mean, there's pictures of people taken of, you know, like nature and all that, but you got into these pictures. What made you get on this boat?
So I wanted to be a writer for a long time. You know, I come from my parents. My father was a writer. My grandfather was a writer. And so that's the kind of path I took. But then at some point, I wanted to have pictures with my photos. And then I asked some friends to take these photos that I wanted, but I didn't really like them. So I started like saying, oh, well, I have to do it myself. And then I just got into it. It was kind of this happenstance that I started taking photographs. And what happened is that I think it's very important for artists to realize is that, you know, the medium you choose kind of has to mesh with the kind of person you are, your character, you know. If you are a very sedate person, you like to sit and not, you know, and sit for many, many hours a day, for instance, if you're not very active, then writing, you know, is very natural for you, right? But if you are very active, like I was very active, I played soccer, I was like, I couldn't sit for more than 5 minutes at a time when I was a kid. So photography, the kind of photography that I went into, was very much in the street, on the go, on your feet, talking and moving constantly. And so kind of it meshed with the kind of person I am, you know. And so and it's very important also to realize that it's not the medium, right? So it could be music, it could be writing, it could be photography, it could be painting. It's not really the medium that's important, but it's what it is that you want to say through this medium.
Now, Ara, has the iPhone, has the smartphone put a dent in photographers' life in the sense that now everyone's a photographer?
Oh, yeah, big time. Well, so it changed. It's kind of, you know, photographers going in this kind of direction, iPhone and this photography, digital photography came along and it kind of knocked it into a different path. So now, you know, like the kind of photography that I do, which is long term and more in depth, is much more now fine art related, right? So it's become right. much kind of an arts.
You had to adjust. You had to adjust.
Yeah,
to,
yeah. Yeah, to completely adjust. And now, you know, there's no reason for me to take certain pictures that everybody's taking all the time. And so I take different types of pictures, which become much more about personalized, much more personal. So you never, you don't have to be the witness anymore, right? As a photographer 20 years ago, when you went to some place, took pictures, you were the witness because there was nobody else there typically. You know, if it was a remote place or something like Harappa or something like that, you were the witness taking pictures and returning this back to the rest of the world. Now everybody's the witness, right? And so right. Now photography becomes much more personal. That is much more about yourself and your involvement, your relationship to places and things. So it's got much more a fine art kind of a dimension now.
Well, that was pretty good adjustment from you because I've known a lot of photographers that have said, you know what, I give up. There's nothing I can do anymore. But you've taken I think you've taken much more art to it now and a lot more of what people sit there and like me, right? They're looking at a picture of a donkey and a broken car or a broken wagon. And you're just sitting there and looking at that and saying, you know what? There's a story behind that. There's a story behind the bullets, the church, I think that's beautiful how you adjusted there. Because 20 years ago, when you did take those pictures and they were in that can, they were in that roll, we couldn't wait for you 3 days later to get those developed so we could get that envelope and see how it looked. Now everything's become so easy.
Yeah. So everything is very, very immediate right now.
Yeah.
Right. So,
got you to? Well, I mean, I don't have anything against you folks out there that are gay, but you took that picture too, and that's, a little controversial. I gotta say.
Well, as I said, you know, identity is it can't just be, you know, just what we see, you know, what is projected by the community, what we see to be wholesome and this or that, you know, what we can't put blinders on, John.
You're right.
My whole approach was no blinders. You know, what is it that I see in front of me as who are Armenians? What are they getting involved with? How does that reflect back on our identity? And so this is all into it. This is all part of it for me.
You're right.
I think it's critical. I mean, if I did bunch of pictures of, you know, not having some of these other elements, people will say, oh, okay, well, you know, this is nice, but is it real?
Yeah. Right? I guess my point on this, Ara, is, and now I'm going to be a little deep on this one, is that when America has pictures like this, it's like, you know what, we got, what, 96 million, 100 million people? And you know what, that's a picture. But when it's an Armenian with a picture like that, it's like, wow. I mean, this is kind of like eye-raising type of experience because you say, we're a little country. I didn't even know we had this type of society that we're out in public doing stuff like. And you know what? I sound like I'm really old-fashioned, but I'm really not. I'm just saying to you what the culture of the Armenian people are because I have nothing to do with that, really. I mean, I don't care about it. But I'm just saying that it is controversial for the sense that we're such a little country and that being in public, gets a lot of people to think about it. That's all. That's all I'm saying on that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you because we're still kind of a conservative, you know, patriarchal kind of culture, right? And so people react. But what's funny, Jono, is that I showed some of these pictures and I've showed these pictures many places. In fact, I showed them recently in a presentation at a church, and reaction.
No,
hasn't
you didn't
been...
put it in a church. Oh wow!
Well, the church hall, right? So I was invited to present work about identity, and so I showed this because this is what we're about. And you know, people like set up, but you know, they kind of accepted it. They kind of there was no like reaction. There was no like, oh, you can't show this. there has not been any of that kind of extreme reaction to this work.
And you know what? I said that as in there are Armenians that would say that. I just wanted their voices heard on it too. So I just threw their cliche out there as well. Have you thought about ever doing anything for any pics of possibly Syria, the Syrian Armenians, or Lebanon going back after all these years to see what that's all about as well?
Yeah, in fact, that's my current project.
Beautiful.
So I'm working in Lebanon now. I was just there, actually, in January. I was there 2 years ago, actually, and I did a lot of interviews with Syrian Armenians who had fled Syria and had settled in Beirut, mostly in Burj Hamoud. Mm-hmm. And so, as I was saying, you know, I did work here in Los Angeles as my identity as my own community. I did the work in Gharapa, which is kind of, you know how we are, like we have this imaginary homeland, right? If you're born in the diaspora, right, you have this kind of imagined what my homeland could be, what right. it is. And that strange relationship of going to a place that you feel that it's your own, but you've never been there before, this kind of ambiguous kind of relationship to this place, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does magnetize. Yeah, I mean, we've always...
I'm sure you felt that too as you went to Armenia.
Of course. Yeah. When they all start clapping when that plane lands, you feel like you're at home.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so the third part is Beirut, where I was born. And then still there is a presence there. There's a past and a present. And so I've been working, taking pictures in Beirut as well. You know, I did a lot of work with Syrian Armenians last time around.
How are the Armenians in Beirut? I mean, how is there... From, you know, maybe I'd say 20 years ago, you had a different mind frame. Have they put everything aside now? Are they living normal lives again?
Well, no, Lebanon is a very difficult place. You know, it was like 3 million people was the population before the Syrian war. 1.5 million refugees have come to Lebanon since the Syrian war began. So there's like huge, huge kind of bloating and difficulties in that society. Like double, almost like 50% more people just walked in over a couple of years. So there's been a lot of difficulty. Right now it's difficult to find work. You know, but some people are going back to the road now has been opened and the Assad government has taken back Halab. But it's a very, very difficult place to live.
So people are going back to Syria right now as well?
Yeah, some of them. Not all of them. A lot of them are still waiting, but some of them are returning. As I was there in January, I met a number of people who were going back to Syria because it's a very difficult place to live. You know, imagine like 1.5 million people walk into your country when your population is 3 million. And you're recovering from war also because there was 20 years of civil war in that country.
You're right.
It's a difficult situation, difficult place to live in terms of the economy.
The economy is not doing too good with overpopulation like that. And you know the funny thing about that, Ara, you never hear about Lebanon being overpopulated. You're hearing about Germany. You're hearing about all these European countries. 1.5 million refugees are in Lebanon. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Brian?
Yeah, it's a huge number.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. No, nobody seems to know that. It's taken a huge toll on the country. And then, you know, Lebanon has always sort of been the country where people went, like Armenians, right? After the genocide, hundreds of thousands went from Syria, went to Lebanon. They settled there. Palestinians came and settled there. It's kind of this country where everybody kind of comes to take refuge. And then some of them, you know, kind of move on afterwards.
Isn't it amazing how that's the one country, probably in this world, that Palestinians, that the Muslims and the Christians, they have to get along to succeed. And they're pulling it off now. I mean... For years, they fought because one was Christian and the other one was Muslim. And now they've gotten along to where they know that they can coexist, which is very rare in this whole entire world right now.
Lebanon has a strange system where certain government posts are given to certain religions, right? So Christians have certain posts and Muslims have other posts, Shias. And Sunnis have different posts in government, and there is this kind of this balance that's been struck over the years. And now it's been restored. You know, during the war, it was completely turned upside down, but now it's been restored, and they're kind of living kind of in semi-peace, I would say. You know, every once in a while, there are issues. They're bombing sometimes. Last time I was there, there was like a bombing like a mile from where I was. But really? What's funny? Yeah, what's funny is the people there are very, very. They live kind of this extreme way where like the most dangerous things seem completely normal to them, like a bombing, right? And so I was in Armenian neighborhoods in Burj Hamud, and at the time the Shias and Sunnis had some kind of conflict going, and they would be putting like car bombs in each other's like streets. And this was literally, John, literally like 5 blocks or 10 blocks from where I was, where the Armenians were. But the Armenians were completely unconcerned because they said, oh, yeah, well, you know, these are the Muslims they're fighting, but they're not going to touch us because we're Christian. If it was a Christian Muslim thing, then they would be very worried. But but it could be like literally 10 blocks away and they would just be, it's not an issue.
Yeah. I guess this was about 1985, I believe. It was a while back. My dad, I don't know what got in him, but he said he's got to go back to Lebanon and see Lebanon. And, well, an intense bombing from the Syrians. They were just launching bomb after bomb, hitting some part of the city. Well, the Armenians were downstairs, and that's where my dad was, and they're just playing tavli, in the basement of a bomb shelter, like, and they're like looking at my dad and they're laughing, and these old guys are playing tavli, and it's like life as usual. And so,
exactly. Like I was in the streets like photographing, and it was a very busy street, and suddenly like it was empty. It was like just completely deserted for a minute, and then everybody was got into the stores to watch TVs, and I went into one of the stores and they were watching the TV, and there was this report of this bombing that literally like a mile away, and then it didn't take more than like 3 minutes before everybody came right back out and just continued doing exactly what they were doing.
So they just want to know who the hell the conflict was with.
Yeah, it was just, and then they just went right back. They didn't.
Okay, so you're doing what is this? What is this that you're shooting in Lebanon? You said you're doing this next project in Beirut. What is this about?
Yeah, so it's the extension of this whole idea about identity. And so, you know, the way I work, John, is not that I have a specific purpose in terms of I'm going to go to photograph XYZ. But what I do is I go into a certain space, like right now it's Burj Hamud, and I photograph, and I try to, through my images, try to kind of figure out, explore what my relationship is to that place. And so as I developed the project over a number of years, the photographs kind of speak to what my relationship to that place is. But what's interesting about Lebanon is that because I have a past there, because I used to live there, my parents live there, we have family photographs from different places in Beirut before 75. So there's this issue there that you know, there's a past and a particular present. So the exploration of identity is taken on sort of a much broader thing in this case, where I'm combining actually in some of them images, old photos and new photos together, trying to kind of find this middle ground between the past and the present and what my personal relationship is to that space.
Is there any one photographer out there, foreign or Armenian, that you look up to and say, that's how I cultivate my mind to the pictures that I take?
Oh, wow. There's several, I would say. You know, so I started a lot of my work with black and white, which I'm still doing black and white work.
I love black and white, by the way. I really do. I think if you stick with that, that is really, there's some sort of art behind black and white. I don't know what it is, but I look at the picture a lot better as a black and white. Does that sound crazy?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, black and white tends to take you much more to the essence of the people and the place. To me, then like color a lot of times, the color being red or blue will trigger other things in your mind and take you different places, while black and white tends to take you straight, I think much more straight to a certain particular idea or the people or the, you know, it's more intense.
Right, black and white. Right. Yeah. Has any of your work been in the type of like art galleries to where it's presented around to where we can see this?
Well, yeah, I've had solo shows here in Los Angeles and group shows. I just finished a group show, and I'm going to have another. I'm going to have a solo show later this year in this nonprofit space. So my work isn't very, I would say, commercially viable in that sense. So I've had one commercial art gallery show, but I'm not represented by a gallery. So a lot of the work is done through nonprofit spaces or through city-owned gallery spaces. Like I've had two solo shows in the LA, Los Angeles City Municipal Art Gallery.
Well, I tell you what, brother, I love your artwork. I say artwork as in pictures, but it, to me, this is art from just a human being on just a quarter of his face in the picture to what we see with the churches and the gun shells and, you know, and even your most controversial picture. I think that's part of us. And that's what I wanted to express was, you know what, I want people to know that we still have we're not all carrying guns and singing patriotic songs either. So this is what life is all about.
Yeah, no, I that is us, man. And I really appreciate the fact that you're saying that, because that's what I always said. It's us. And, you know, what for instance, the newest movement in Armenians now is transgender Armenians want to become part of the community, right? So somebody like a gay person or lesbian or transgender can be that easily, right? Outside, there's all kinds of organizations and places they can go. But what they really want to do is they want to have their Armenianness included in the way they live their lives. So they are us, because they want to be Armenian and gay and lesbian and transgender at the same time. So yeah. I think it's very important to include all kinds of Armenians in the way we see ourselves.
It's a tough process, because I think you hit it right on the money. We are a conservative background. I mean, it's a background of, I would have to say Christianity plays a big role in it. But now you're seeing the Armenian, the modern Armenian, to where he's saying Christianity is important, but living life the way I want to live is important as well. So they have to correlate with one another nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. So,
well, I appreciate you being on the show, Ara. It's been great. And if there's anything that we could do for you when you're in Lebanon, if you want us to put out anything, please feel free to get a hold of me, and we'll do something. We appreciate it.
I really appreciate you having me on your show, Jono, and I look forward to hearing the podcast. And well, I'll keep you informed of all my projects going forward.
Thank you very much. And folks, that's Ara Oshagan, and it was a great show there, Brian, wasn't it?
It's fantastic.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ara.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. That was a fun interview, my friend.
It was amazing.
And you know what? I hope he doesn't get off the phone and think I was being controversial with some of these. And I hope out there for you folks that are listening, I didn't mean to be controversial. I just want to bring up every aspect of the Armenian life and what Armenians think. And that's all I was doing, bringing up everything. So, and Ara was great about it. Thank you so much, Ara. And that was a great interview.
Yep. I mean, I was looking at his photos the entire time too. They draw you in. And you just can't help but stare at them. It was really impressive.
What got me, Brian, was I don't know why an artist, the oil canvas type of artist, hasn't taken to one of these pics and say, hey, I'd like to draw this. I'd like to put this on canvas. Because it's that one, I got to tell you, with the bullets in front, the bullet shells in front of a church, the church stood like a castle.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost signifies that's what it took to get that.
Yeah.
It's like point A to point B. And then my other one, I don't think everyone will like that one, but I loved it. It was funny. It was the donkey just kicking back behind the wagon.
Yeah.
Or that broken down vehicle there. And he's saying, if he's not moving, I'm not moving. It was beautiful. I love it. I love his work, and I hope to stay in touch with Ara. Whatever future projects he's got, we'd love to have him back on and maybe present some of that and put it on our show as well, some of his artwork. So thank you so much, Ara. And, folks, we've run out of time. And we'll be back next week. Thank you, Brian.
No problem. For
folks out there, Chris couldn't make it in today, but we'll have Chris on next week. And our other people, Anush, Mariam, and I got someone in mind here, Brian. We're going to have Andy. I'll tell you the whole scoop on Andy.
All right.
What we're going to have is an Armenian music once a month, and he's going to give us a scoop on who's hot, who's doing what in pop, patriotic music, folk music, everything like that.
I may have to get him for my show.
Well, yeah, that would be great, too. But I just didn't want, I've had past guests, but they've all been on one area.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, I told him, if you're going to do this, Andy, I want all angles covered here. I want the folk music, patriotic music. I want pop music, mm-hmm. whatever it is, because we haven't had someone that talks about all sorts of music out there.
Yeah.
So we're going to have that on our show, too. Once a month, we're going to have Andy on our show, and then we'll talk to you guys more about that. So Mariam and Anush, we'll see you guys next week as well. And from Jono and Brian, we are out of here. Genatsit kishe party, my friends.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jono Kabinjian. Find the show online at armeniaproud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at facebook.com/armeniaproud or Twitter at armeniaproud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.